This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Can each of you talk about how, if Kimberly approached you specifically, or how did it come about that each of you were in this?
I chased Kimberly on this one. I totally read the script. You know, I heard Kim was doing a movie. I love her first film. Read the script. Had no idea about Stop Loss. And then I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with Steve. You know, the idea of playing a soldier always was, in my mind. And then, I don't know, I love Steve. You know, I thought he embodied, like, exactly someone that I've always wanted to, like, be, even. I mean, I would never really, I guess, never really had the balls to go and join the military. You know, but yeah, and then I did a really extensive audition process, long, and back and forth to New York and stuff like that, and then I eventually came on the movie.
And she, I read the script. I had just finished working, and I was a little worn out, and I went to meet with her, and we had a decent meeting, and then she didn't want me, and the studio kind of did, and I guess I spent more time with her, and I was kind of like, at that point, I wasn't sure whether or not it was right for me either, obviously, because I felt, she was a filmmaker and shouldn't have me forced it upon her, and then I guess she kind of changed her mind, and then we started spending time together, and we developed a really great working relationship, and I decided it was an incredible opportunity to work with her and to play this character. I thought there was so much range and of emotion and that sort of thing with this guy. And so then, as we were shooting it, and as we started shooting, I was so happy that it all worked out, because I loved the experience and everyone I was working with so much.
So how do you see this guy?
I see him as a guy who's always sort of known what was right and lived that way through most of his life. I think he's a very straightforward, honest, decent guy. And, through the events in this movie, finds himself having to reconsider all those things about himself and kind of that crisis of conscience and that sort of soul searching over what is duty and honor and weighing what is most important to you. But I think his whole life, I think everything was very black and white to him, kind of, it's the right way to do things and the wrong way.
Well, you guys play best friends. I'm sorry, continue the rest of your question.
No, go ahead.
Okay. You guys play best friends, so I wondered if you had to get together, separately, just to bond and to get, get that dynamic before you shot.
But I had never met Ryan before, and then we kind of just got thrown into boot camp together. This is like Hollywood boot camp, it was six days out in the 106 degree heat of Austin, which was bonding in itself. But when you camp, there's no TV, there's no nothing, you just have to sit and talk to each other, and Ryan came on was a leader immediately, and I took to that, and we all just sort of fell right into our roles, and it was a learning experience. It was like camp. It was like summer camp, for kids, and we got to shoot guns and learn urban combat and stuff.
You'd be surprised how close you can get over the course of like 6 days around the clock with a group of guys, and it was one of the best things Kim did for us and for the film, because it was genuine, and I think you see it and feel it in the movie.
Absolutely.
And I think even that boot camp laid the groundwork for where we are all at today, the way we all still kind of hang and stay in touch, because it was real. We all genuinely like each other, and it's a pretty diverse group in terms of age and background.
We all get together. Ryan's got kids, so he's a little more locked down, but we all spent New Year's together. Mm-hmm. We all spent New Year's out of the country together. we're all family like that. And a lot of people say that on movies. Yeah, we're all like family, here. But this is this is really real. I love these guys.
And we shot the movie. We started a year and a half ago.
Yeah,
so
totally. Mm-hmm.
Once you heard about the policy of stop loss, how important was that in your decision making process to take these roles, both of you?
For me, it wasn't. I never had a political agenda. I didn't want to feel like the movie did. It was more, what is most interesting to me about this movie in comparison to the other movies that are related to this war is this one is strictly from the soldier's perspective. It is strictly telling the soldier's story. You know, it's not about a leftist sort of anti-war or whatever to me. And so the fact that the character gets stop-loss, that is the crux of what he goes through in the film. But that to me wasn't an overriding reason, like, people need to know about this. I think it's just sort of, I think it's good that people know about it, and I think it has kind of been, you know, not covered up, but kind of put in the background, and it is important, I think, to have an awareness of. But it wasn't a crusade about, like, the world must know about stop loss. You know?
But do you have an opinion of stop loss yourselves?
You know, I don't like getting political, but the only thing I will say about that is, I feel like if there was a regular draft, you know, like Vietnam, I don't think we would be at war still. You know, I think it would affect different families, you know, richer families, and I think that we would not be at war. And I don't like the term. You know, a lot of people are throwing around the backdoor draft, and it's debatable, but because a lot of soldiers know about stop loss, they know about the clause. You know, it's not some like thing that, you know, that some of them don't. You know, I think some of them is brushed under, you know, the rug, you know, and try to kind of breezed over and not brought to attention. But this is the only war that it's been used, you know, really. And
I think that the soldiers now are slightly more aware because 4 or 5 years in, it's happened to a lot of people they know. Yeah. I think when they signed up, it wasn't something they were told up front.
Right. It's just, you know? It's not a big selling point, you know, when you're trying to get somebody to sign up.
And your opinion?
You know, I'd hate to have it happen to me. I can understand the frustration. I think if someone signs up and dedicates and survives the length of what their contract is meant to be, and I know that these soldiers in Iraq, where they hate it, they hate being there, and it's boring, and it's a desert, and they sit and think about every day, I'm going to get out, I'm going to give my mother a hug, I'm going to have a baby, I'm going to get this job, and that's what gets them through.
They make plans.
That's what gets them through their time over there. And then, you know, so I can't imagine having that all kind of taken away from you.
Particularly at the 11th hour.
Absolutely, at the 11th hour. And I just think it speaks to, really, how unpopular this war is and how much people do want it to end, you know, to kind of have to force people back into combat. I mean, that's what it says to me, so...
How did you guys become Texans? I mean, did you go talk to a lot of people there in Austin, or did you just have friends?
Being there helped.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's so atmospheric, you can't help.
It's intoxifying.
Yeah, and I mean, I know I put on the jeans and the cowboy boots the whole time I was there, and I listened to all the country music. And
I'm from Alabama, and I love country, but I didn't listen to it as much as you did. I actually love country music, but you listen to it like a maniac.
I had further to go because I'm East Coast, Northeast Coast, so I had to
overcompensate.
Really, yeah.
And you were in like the barbecue capital of the country or something like that.
Yeah, I was 205 when I got off the movie. I've never been.
That's right, man.
I was a big old boy. I've been 215 in my life, but that was when I was like working out and musclehead and meathead. Just barbecue and beer.
That'll do it.
It's true.
So you're trying to say that Austin has a party life?
Nah, I think there's a little college there. Just a little one. I think they do a little drinking and a little party.
What's actually that like, being like a big movie in Austin? You know, how is that with the town? Because it's a very film-centric town.
They're just used to Robert Rodriguez and his bunch of money.
Yeah.
What's that experience like, though, being in that place?
It was cool. They embraced us. You know, it was, you know... The more when we went out and stuff, you know, the managers and bar owners kind of were like, yeah, come on back, you know, sort of thing. And it was, they embraced us, though. It was fun. It was a good time. We lived right on 6th Street, so it was kind of a, you couldn't walk out of your house without running into some drunk person. So you're just like, oh, all right, y'all want to get a drink?
Yeah.
What's with the little facial hair there? Is that for a role or just
for
fun? Yeah,
I'm doing G.I. Joe right now.
Oh, you're the other G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, I'm the guy. But yeah, I'm just trying to grow up a little bit.
Now, Channing, I'll just throw this question at you. In the last few years, your career has definitely, like, exploded, and you're doing G.I. Joe right now. Mm. And you're also going to be in Public Enemies, I believe.
Yeah, little part. I get a really cool little part.
Right. So can you talk a little bit about what attracted you to being G.I. Joe and what the experience has been like? And also, are you looking forward to working with Christian Bale and Johnny Depp?
Oh, man. That goes without saying. Yeah, I mean, that's obvious. But I've been a huge fan of both those guys and Michael Mann. But, you know, G.I. Joe, I was actually originally opposed to it. I didn't, especially coming off of Stop Loss, playing a soldier about a really, you know, sensitive topic. I had no interest in going to play a fake soldier, you know, in a hyper-real kind of fantasy war. Like, I just was like, nope, no thanks. And then it came back around, and then I met on it. I read the script finally, and the script was great, and it actually has nothing to do with war. Nothing to do at all. It's X-Men. I mean, it's X-Men and Mission Impossible, Star Wars. Like, that's all it is. I got kind of excited about it and then jumped on. And, you know, Joe's in it, so it kind of was more of an incentive. I love him. He's one of my best friends. And to get a chance to work with him for, like, a long time is really fun. And then I get to play Pretty Boy Floyd, so it's kind of a cool and the Michael Mann thing, you know. And Christian Bale gets to shoot me, so I've never died in a movie. I'm a little nervous. Like, I'm like, oh god, it's a tall order, you know.
Joseph plays the opposite side of you.
Yeah.
Are you guys trash talking each other?
Oh, you have no idea. We have no idea. This one, he gets the better of me on this one. I'm strapped to a table and he's like torturing me. Yeah. So it's not gonna be fun. It's not gonna be fun. I'm like, great. Wait till number two. You got it coming.
What's Franklin? That's something you're doing?
It's something I finished. It's kind of it's a strange movie. It's kind of hard to describe, but it's essentially four different characters whose lives intersect in London. It's with Ava Green and Sam Riley, who's really great.
What was the analogy you said yesterday? That was crazy.
It said Batman meets Magnolia.
Whoa. Hard time picturing that.
It's a futuristic film.
My role, sort of takes place. I play two characters, and the majority of it takes place in sort of an alternate reality. But the whole movie isn't set in the future. That's a misnomer.
And you obviously finished filming that. Do you have something coming up in the next few months?
No, nothing I'm starting on right now. No, I'm writing, but I'm kind of just...
Babies.
My kids.
Taking care of his babies.
Just hanging out.
Ryan, you've done two military coming home sequences. Mm-hmm. One in Flags of Our Fathers, mm-hmm. one in this film. And both of them have an undertone of irony. Mm-hmm. How else do you think they differ?
Well, I think they differ certainly in the capacity that war was absolutely necessary and just, and I would have given my life for. And that generation kept a lot more to themselves. I don't think, you know, the idea of like that displacement that you that the soldier feels coming home, and the notion of PTSD, those things weren't really an aspect of the World War II soldier's reality. I think everyone came home and kept it to themselves. I know my grandfather didn't talk about it. And, you know, the guys today I found that we talk to that have served over in Iraq are much more forthcoming, and there's a lot more acceptance of them kind of, you know, dealing with what they've experienced. I think that's been... And the other aspect that I think is incredibly different is, like, the modern soldier is that World War II, a kid was plucked from the neighborhood and put in the battlefield like within the space of a month, and now you go through extensive training and you're a machine, you're a professional soldier now, and that's certainly not how it was in World War II.
Did it surprise you to find out that Americans are in hiding, that people that have served our country are like have to live like under the radar now? I mean, that to me was the most surprising thing watching the film, because you don't really think of that. Now, I mean, you think about during the Vietnam War, people would go to Canada, but did that surprise you guys at all, that aspect of it?
It did, but I guess I would draw that same parallel of the expats who were up in Canada or went off to Mexico. I mean, you know, that was the choice they were faced with when the draft was instituted, and now there is no draft, and so, you know, I think that's sort of, it's a similar notion, really, so... I mean, it is surprising, and hopefully that will change.
Well, a lot of these guys, like your character, probably say, "I can't take it. I'm at the top of my and I know I'm going to flip over the edge.
Right, and that's a dangerous thing.
Yeah,
that's a
and
dangerous
they shouldn't
thing.
Be sent back when
it's
they're
a dangerous
state.
Thing for the other soldiers. It's a dangerous thing for the civilians in on the foreign soil. And there's also this thing to me that is really disturbing about the Army now will accept people who have legitimate injuries and have legitimate deficiencies and put them back into because they can't get enough people over there. You know, I know people who are in the National Guard in their 60s. They'll take them over to Iraq, and they might put them on a desk job. But, you know, back in the old days, if you had a sprain or a bad back,
you weren't
even making the Army. Now you can be blind in one eye and be put on the battlefield. It's that disturbs me.
The cannon fodder thing is the idea of that sounds creepy.
Have either of you made any trips overseas? I know a lot of actors have kind of gone and either with the USO or whatever.
No,
and
I haven't.
Not at all?
I haven't. I plan to, though. Me and Joe and a couple of other guys that were involved in the film are planning to do some sort of documentary eventually, and we're still shaping what it's really going to be about. You know, my question, I just want to know what they think about all these war films coming out. I want to like maybe give them a camera and let them ask me questions, you know. What do they think? Do they think Hollywood's doing a good job and you know, and do we get it right? Like, I know I'd you know, we can't get it right. It's impossible. That's kind of like the you know, we can get close and we can try our hardest, but we're never really going to know what it's like to be in war, and all we can really try to do is create a real person instead of a real, you know, soldier.
You talked to Kim's brother who was over there. Was he really affected by it, or does he seem like he's still a regular guy?
He seems pretty regular to me. I mean, he's
did
really
close. Did he have two tours, or
Chan.
He just went once? Or
did he have one or two?
I know he's in for 4 years. I don't know how long he was over there.
Because he was only 18 or something when he went over to it. 18 or 19.
No, he was
pretty young.
He was well, you know, you're right. You're actually right. No, I think he was 19 or 20.
Yeah.
I mean, he was one of those that signed up after 9/11 with the intent of getting back at the people who aggressed against us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the thing of it is that while he was over there, Kim would IM with him when he was in Fallujah, whatever it was, and his closest friend over there was a guy who served as the inspiration, a guy who was stop loss, and kind of his life was put on hold, and so everything sort of began there for Kim, and then she started going around the country and researching. She'd go to actual homecomings and did extensive interviews, and it kind of all built, but Brett was around and quite a bit of the movie, and really helped out in the beginning, and we had guys who were there with us, soldiers that we spent our free time with, that I think really enhanced the truth.
Brett got out because of a shoulder injury. He was a sniper, and he couldn't, his shoulders all messed up, and when he got out, the guy that replaced him died actually during the filming of Stop Loss.
Mm.
And he led his he was a leader of a team, sniper unit, and they ran into an L-shaped ambush, and they all, I think he just died.
Oh yeah, because your guy was a sniper too, so he must have talked about
he was he wanted to be a sniper. He didn't actually get to he didn't make it, but he was going back in. He was going back into business.
Mm. God.
Brian, you said you were going to write?
I am writing right now.
And is this a project you want to like write and direct?
Yeah, this is something that I'm hoping to direct this fall, yeah. Yeah, a small kind of dark comedy based on a true crime story. And probably set in Texas. So.
The kids should write.
And
he should direct.
Here we go.
I want to work with him someday. I want him to direct me someday.
You have a boo-boo?
Yeah.
What happened?
Interesting story. Let me just make sure my publicist is in here. You can tell me. I got in a headbutting competition with one of the soldiers last night.
The real
night.
Guys?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
And I lost.
See, we haven't left it behind yet.
No, it's not totally gone.
And on that, we're going to go.
Yeah. All right, and you bleed, too.
Thank you guys.
Yeah.